यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जना यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जना यमुना तेरा वनाचारे यमुना तेरा वनाचारे यमुना जय राधा माधव कुञ्जबिहारी जय राधा जय राधा माधव कुञ्जबिहारी जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे जय गौरनिताय जय गौरनिताय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय
श्री श्री राधा माधव की जय श्री श्री गोनिताय की जय श्री श्री सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान की जय श्रीनाथ जी की जय श्री प्रभुपाद की जय समवेत भक्तवृंद की जय निताय गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि बोल Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for coming. It's so wonderful to be here with you. This whole weekend has been just an amazing experience. So this class is going to be quite short, relatively speaking. We have to move at a good pace because I have a flight to catch from the airport. So yeah, let's get started. This presentation is called God and Google, Human Relationships in the Internet Age. To begin with, okay, to start off with, I want you to imagine something with me, okay? Think of someone who knows everything in this world. Wait. Don't get too excited. Answers when I call for it, okay? He knows everything. He sees everything. He is present everywhere. He can give you anything you want. Who is this person? Yeah. Yeah, okay. So most places I go, people are a lot more religious than all of you. And more faithful. And they actually think of the right answer, which is God. Okay? But I've changed my presentation since I'm in New Jersey here. And the answer is correct. It's Google. Google has, of course, all of these things, right? All of these qualities. Anything we want from him, we can get. We live in an age where practically nothing is out of reach. I'm going to turn a little bit this way so I can see half the screen also. Anything you want to get in this world, you can get from Google. If you need to do any kind of research, for example, then you can just go to Wikipedia and you'll get the answers for whatever you want. If you're looking for a social life, then you've got Facebook or... When I was in India, it was Orkut. You know, Orkut is the big one, right? If you need to get married, then there's, of course, shadi.com you can go to and find the partner of your dreams. If you need entertainment, you need any kind of medical advice, there's webmd.com, there's mayoclinic.com, and so on, right? So we live in an age where everything is available on the internet. And so the question really arises, is God obsolete? Is he one of these things of a bygone age that we no longer need anymore? And this question is actually not such a crazy one. If you go to a website called churchofgoogle.org, right? You can find there a whole group of people who regard Google as God. And they'll give you, they have 9 arguments there for why Google is actually God. Okay. Now, let me ask you this question. If you had to argue for why Google is actually God, what argument would you make? How would you argue for that? Give me some arguments in support. Google knows everything. Yeah, this is the wrong direction. You're supporting God. We want Google. He can answer anything. Good. Google doesn't discriminate. Everyone has equal access to Google. Yeah. Very good. No priests necessary. Someone else? Google knows many languages. He can communicate to you in a personal way. Omnipresent, he's present everywhere. Google can tell me the right answer, for sure. Okay. Easy access, as long as you're fortunate enough to have a computer.
Google gives advice and then lets us do if you, what you want
to do. Yeah. Good. He's not possessive. Yathechasi tathakuru. Do as you so desire.
Google has no life.
Huh? Google
has no
life. Oh, he's living on my computer for sure. So, okay, those are enough arguments in support of Google. Bolo Google Bhagavan ki jai. Okay, so how about arguments on the other side for why Google is not God? Why is Google not God? Give me things that I can verify. Yes. Man-made, okay, good point. Yeah? Oh, I don't know about creativity. It's pretty creative. Doesn't read, reads my mind. I put any, well, okay, I have to put it in. But it's pretty, it actually does read your mind. Have you ever put something in and it goes, did you actually mean, and then so. It doesn't care for us, okay, good.
Google is not our brand, so we can go back.
Huh? no matter where I am, I always go back to Google. Google has a source itself. Good. Yeah, Google has. Okay, so here are some comparisons that I did beforehand. These all encompass the things you're talking about. It's very similar to what you're saying. For one thing, Google is ephemeral. It means it's sometimes there and sometimes not there. I knew a friend who he'd spend his whole life on Facebook. That was his, you know, it was kind of everything to him. He lived and breathed and did everything on Facebook. And this was his whole lifeline, his whole social life. And then one day, you know what happened? Facebook deleted his account. And his whole life was finished. It was gone. Yeah, have you ever had the experience of losing your cell phone? And kind of everything is gone? All your contacts, everything you know? It's much, much worse with Google. It's there sometimes, it's not there. It depends on your internet connection. God, on the other hand, is eternal, right? He's always there. He's always been present, he is present, he will be present in the future. Google is always in flux. It's always changing. So what you found, that piece of knowledge you found on Google today, you'll go back to the same site tomorrow and it may or may not be there. Right? It may be gone. That information, that fact may have changed or disappeared. Whereas God, on the other hand, is stable. Right? He'll always be there for you. He's always been standing in the same curved position as he always is, and he's always ready to give. Google, on the other hand, is public. I don't know why that's blue. Why is it blue? Google is public. And this is one of the biggest problems with the internet now. Is so many cases in the United States in terms of privacy issues and having your privacy invaded or boundaries crossed in a way that you don't want to, even outside of your own choice because of where Google can intrude. You know, when I go, I teach at the College of William & Mary, and when I first start my classes, the first time I enter class, my students already know everything about me. Right? They've looked me up, and if you look up Ravi Gupta, immediately what shows up is Radhika Raman Das, and they know I've given a seminar in Tawako, New Jersey, because it's uploaded, and this is, and everything they know. Whatever I want them to know and whatever I don't want them to know, it's all there. God, on the other hand, can be, if it's our choice, a completely private affair. It means our relationship with him is something that's very, very individual, and he relates to each person directly through the heart, as the supersoul within the heart of all beings. Google, and this is a big one, several of you mentioned, he's impersonal. The amazing thing about the internet is that you can be anyone you like on the internet. You can put up any kind of face you want there. You can hide behind it, right? You don't have to present your own identity. It's kind of an atmosphere with no strings attached, and I think that's the next one here. You know, it used to be that someone would spend their whole life studying some subject, thinking about it, writing about it, and then they'd produce this one big work about it. It was their life's work. It was a classic. And that classic is then read for generations beyond. Now, any fool who has anything to say can put it up on the internet and they'll get an audience, right? Where there's very little responsibility attached to it. Right? Whereas God, on the other hand, is inherently personal, right? And responsibility. There's no escape from that within the Lord. If one wants a relationship with the Lord, it has to be with a face. He's going to interact with us in a personal way, and we have to be upfront about who we are and what our nature is. There's no cheating God. There's no hiding behind anything in the way that you might hide and create a persona on the internet. Finally, Google is about information. This is supposed to be the biggest thing of our age, is the prevalence of information. How much information at our fingertips? They used to call it the information superhighway. And practically anything you want to get, anything you want to know, you can find it there. But the question is that information actually knowledge? Is that information actually knowledge? And so let me ask you to think about this for just a minute. What do we mean by knowledge? If someone asked you to define what knowledge is, how would you define it? Something that, okay, but let's try to describe it in a little bit of a broader sense. We're talking about any kind of knowledge here, not just spiritual knowledge. How would you define it? Yes? Something that's true, okay, that seems to be a very basic requirement. Yes? That brings you out of darkness. Good. Yeah, so which helps you do your job. Knowledge is what works, they say, right? If it works, then it must be true, it must be factual.
Which doesn't change with time.
Something that's stable, it doesn't change with time. Good. Yes?
Experience.
Something that's based on experience. Very good. And that can be verified by experience. Excellent. The Srimad Bhagavatam gives a really nice definition of what knowledge is. And the definition is found in the second verse of the text. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam. And Prabhupada puts this in a really nice little phrase, memorizable, quotable quote. He says, knowledge, in fact I think I have it up here. Knowledge is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such a beautiful phrase. Reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Now, the first part of this is kind of the obvious part, right? We assume that knowledge has to be real. It has to be something that's true. Right? And it has to be different from that which is untrue. You have to be able to distinguish it from that which is illusion, that which is non-factual. Okay. That we can accept. But the second part is as important as the first. It is as crucial. Something is not knowledge, okay? It can be reality distinguished from illusion, but that's not enough. There's yet one more thing required, equally important, the second half. Namely, it has to be for the welfare of all. It has to be beneficial. If something is true or factual, but it's not beneficial, whatever it is, it's not knowledge, according to Bhagavatam. Now, this is a very important point in our own times. Because there used to be a time, a period, not too long ago, where people thought, that scientists thought, that our job is the discovery of knowledge. So I'm just going to discover whatever it is, as long as it's true or factual, I'm going to throw it out into the world, and what people do with it, what happens to it, is not my responsibility. Right? My job is just to discover what fact is. Reality distinguished from illusion, that's all what I do. How it's used is not my responsibility. But those days are over. I'm kind of moving ahead here. Things like global warming, right? Military technology, genetic engineering, nuclear physics, all these things, they've woken us up to this fact that it's simply not safe, it's simply not acceptable anymore to say, no, my job is just to discover knowledge. In fact, what we realize is with that knowledge comes a great deal of responsibility. A great deal of responsibility. A very famous statement that Einstein made. He said, science can tell us how things are, but not how they should be. Science can tell us how things are, but not how they should be. This is a very important distinction. Science is descriptive, but not prescriptive. And he knew this by practical experience. You know this formula? E equals mc squared. It changed the history of the world. It changed the direction of the world. And amazing things happened as a result of it. Wonderful things. The world we live in today would not be possible without this. But also, there were some not so nice things that happened with it too. And the most not so nice thing that happened using that formula is what? The atomic bomb, right? Nuclear science. And in a letter that Einstein wrote to his son, just a few months before he died, he's kind of reviewing his life, giving his advice to his son and leaving him behind. He said this: I made one great mistake in my life when I signed the letter to President Roosevelt recommending that atom bombs be made. Right? It means what? He understood this point from direct experience. That knowledge is not just facts. It's not just information. Knowledge has the great power to transform. Not just information, but transformation at the same time. And how it transforms, that's our responsibility. Reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Wonderful definition, complete. Both sides have to be there. Well, forget knowledge for a minute. When most people are on the internet, they're not looking for knowledge anyway, right? Do you know what they're looking for? Not even information. Oh, plagiarism. Yeah. hold on. Let me move ahead. We've done this. Here are the top five searches on Google during 2009. Okay, last year. Michael Jackson. Okay, we know why. He died in 2009. Facebook. 20, which is a Spanish social networking site, so it's popular not just in Spain, but all across the Spanish-speaking world. Twitter. And Sanalika, which is a Turkish networking site. Okay, it's used not just in Turkey, but all across these are the top five searches in 2009. People are not looking for knowledge. Do you know what they're looking for? They're looking for relationships, right? That's what we're looking for, is relationships. And that's the one thing that no matter how advanced Google gets, it cannot offer us, right? Is relationship. In fact, that's the only thing, that is one thing that we can only find to our full satisfaction in God. Right? This is the thing that he has the upper hand on, is in relationship. Now, you could say, well, you know, I've heard that many times, relationship with God. But how's that any more accessible? How's that any more possible for us? You know, Google I can't have a relationship with, understood. But God seems to be equally nebulous and equally inaccessible and equally difficult to figure out and equally not there. What does it mean to have a relationship with God? So let's look at that side a little bit. So far we've been kind of talking about analyzing, criticizing Google. But let's look at the other side now. God. God and Google. So let's study the God part. If you were to go onto the street and kind of ask the average person, who is God? What is God? What kind of ideas or definitions or qualities would you hear out on the street? He's an energy, right? Very powerful energy. All powerful, good, omnipotent. Very kind, good. God is everywhere. Omnipresent. What else? Eternal. God is love, good. The Supreme Father. Generator or creator. Yeah. You'd find a whole variety of different types of qualities and so on. And in fact, the Shastras, the Vedas, they describe different levels of understanding of God. Kind of the basic level you find in any society, in any culture, no matter how far back you go into history, is this idea of God as nature. God in nature. God is energy that pervades nature. People from the beginning of time have looked around at the sky and the sun and the moon and so on, and they've said, there's some higher power here. There's some higher presence here. The sun rises and sets on time, and the wind blows, and the tides come in and come out according to a schedule, and the seasons keep turning. There's some higher power here. They used to think, actually, that religion was something that was invented at some point in human history. But in fact, they found that even with the earliest forms of human beings that they found through archaeology and so on, they always have some religious life associated with them. They won't find anything practically, but they'll always find something that gives a marker of, oh, these people believed in something higher. It's some kind of a spiritual reality. It's kind of hardwired into us. It's part of our being. Right? So that's the basic level. If someone is a little bit higher, a little bit more advanced, then they say, okay, God just is not just nature diffuse in the world, but he's also the creator of nature. And they address God as creator, as father. This is kind of commonly, even if you go to, you know, any temple or talk to any Hindu or Christian or Muslim or any religious tradition, this is kind of the primary mode of address of God, is he's the creator of the world. Jagat Karta, he's Srishti Karta, Jagdish, he's the father of this world. But the question that the Vedas ask is, sure, we can talk about God in so many different ways. Omnipotent, omnipresent, creator, maintainer, destroyer, etc., etc. But each one of these descriptions is always talking about God in our terms, right? In relation to us. He's the creator of this world. He's my father in this world. He's all-powerful, he's all-knowledgeable, in ways that relate to our world, our society, our life. But the question that we should ask is, what is God when he's not related to us, when he's not connected to us, when he's not busy with us? What is he then? What is he like then? What are his qualities then? Who is he then? We sometimes think that when we call God creator, when we call him Jagat Karta or Srishti Karta, that we're doing him a big favor, you know? That we've said such a big thing about him. He must be impressed. He must be happy. But in fact, the scriptures tell us that that's not a big deal for God at all. Right? It's not something that amazing. He takes care of all of these things in this creation just by delegating. He says, oh, the rains and the thunder, okay, Indra, you take care of it. The oceans, Varuna, why don't you look at it after it? The wind needs to keep blowing, Vayu, you look at it after it. Creating the world, in Brahma, you can do it. Right? And he delegates everything. Just imagine, if you were the richest, wealthiest, most famous, most powerful, all-knowing person in the world, what would you spend all your time doing? Right? You wouldn't have to do all of this if you didn't want to. And Krishna, he delegates everything like this. He just hands it out. Being the judge, well, he doesn't need to do that. He hires Yamaraj. Says, you sit there and you wait in line until all these people show up and you judge them and give them what they're due. When Krishna is not busy with us, which he's not most of the time, what is he busy with? What's his primary quality? Enjoying, right? Enjoying. This is what he does. This is why he's called Rama. This is why he's called Rama. Ramati iti Ramaha. He who's always enjoying is Rama. Ramayate iti Ramaha. He who causes others to enjoy, he's Rama. So that person who's always enjoying, Ramate, and causing others to enjoy, that person is God. And that enjoyment is called, what he does during that enjoyment is called Leela. Right? It's called Leela. Now, this is such an amazing concept, this idea of Leela. It's such a unique concept. You can study so many different religious traditions of the world. You can study so many different aspects of Hinduism. But this concept of Leela, that God spends his time playing, right, is just mind-blowing. It's completely out of the ordinary. That what is God busy with? Play. This is what he likes to do, is play. And that's completely inconceivable. Oh, how could God be that? He has to be powerful. Yeah. But why would he want to go around displaying all his power? Right? Why would he need to do that? If you are the most powerful, why do you have to display it? Oh, he knows everything. Why does he need to go around acting as the smartest person in the world? He doesn't need to do that. You know, it's actually a fact that the more power you have, the less you have to show it off. And the less you have, the more you have to show it off. I remember once I was in Delhi, in our ISKCON temple in Delhi for Janmashtami. And we had, the Delhi temple is always getting dignitaries. Right? So at that time, that year the prime minister didn't come, but the minister of the interior or whatever it's called, kind of next in line, he came to visit the temple. And it was a big occasion, right? He came, and the chief minister of Delhi came. Okay. Now, when the big guy came, he just came in simple pajama kurta, you know, and kind of they separated the crowd and just kind of walking there, and you couldn't see all the arrangements that were made. But when the chief minister came, the little guy, right, then everywhere there were like these big guys with guns, and they were climbing on top of all these pillars, and they had their finger on the trigger and their hand, and they were pointing in different directions, and it was a huge show, even though it was the little guy, right? Because the smaller you are, the more you have to show it off, right? Lord Indra has a need. I'm the master. These people don't recognize it. I'm going to destroy their village of Vrindavan. Right? Let them all die. Krishna doesn't need to do that kind of display, right? Because he's the supreme powerful. He's the strongest, right? So he says, all of you can do the power game. You can all do the power play. It doesn't matter. My job, I'm going to play, right? So what's Krishna worried about? Not whether the world was created or not on time, not whether or not people were judged and went to heaven or hell properly. What is Krishna concerned about? Mother Yashoda is running after him, and he's going to get caught. And if he gets caught, he's going to get spanked. And this is his main worry, right? This is Krishna's main concern. Imagine, Srishti Karta, Jagat Karta, the Lord of the universe, this is what he's concerned about. Queen Kunti says, Atyanta Vidambanam. This is very confusing. Very confusing. Right? You're feared by fear personified, and yet you're afraid of your mother? So Krishna, he enjoys this type of Leela. Because Krishna is Leela Purushottam, he enjoys every single type of relationship that is known. Our Acharya, Srila Rupa Goswami, therefore define God. When they're asked to define God, they don't define him as the creator of the world. They don't define him as the maintainer of everything. They define him as Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He who is the abode, the embodiment of all rasas, of all different kinds of relationships. Any kind of relationship we're looking for, we can find it in Krishna. Whatever kind of relationship we're looking for. You see, relationships in this world, we're all looking for a relationship. Right? But the problem with relationships in this world, there's several problems, two main ones I want to highlight. What are the problems with relationships in this world? Give me some. They're temporary, okay? Big thing. They start and they end. If they don't end before our life ends, then they'll end at the end of life. We have to give it up. they're often based on self-interest, right? I'm trying to get something out of you, you're trying to get something out of me. As long as I can get what I want from you, then our relationship lasts. If it's not, then it doesn't last. What else? Yeah, they're hard to maintain. A lot of work goes into it. What else? Okay, here's two things. First of all, the number of relationships we can have in this world is limited, right? It's limited. How many people can you have a meaningful relationship with at any given time in your life? How many people? Okay, maybe not one, but four, five, maybe 10, 15, 20 at most, okay? And then beyond that, it starts being like, you haven't called me in ages. What happened? Oh, I've been really busy. I'm sorry. Come by sometime. Definitely I'll come by. And you both know you're never coming and they're never coming, right? But you just kind of have to do the formality. I definitely will be here. So at that point, it gets that. It's acquaintances, formalities. But meaningful relationships is limited. How many people we can have a relationship with. And then, of those people you have a meaningful relationship, how much can you give to each person in that relationship, in those different relationships? If I spent 25% of my emotional energy having a relationship with you, how much do I have left for you? 75%, if you're the only other person, right? But if you've got one more person, then 33%. If you've got 10 people, and you as the numbers increase, then you start getting stretched thin, right? We've all had this experience in life, where you've got too many demands and too many people pulling on different sides. You can't handle it. I can't be there for you all the time, because I've got other people to be there for. And then if you're there for too many people, then you can't be there for yourself. And you start feeling like you're completely being used. The nature of relationships with Krishna. The nature of relationships with Krishna is that Krishna can have a meaningful relationship with every single living entity in this world. And he can be there for every individual, how much? 100%. If he's there for you 100%, then how much does he have left for you? 100%. Purnamadaha purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnamevavashishyate purnasya purnamadaya. You take from the whole, you take away how much? 100% purnam. How much is left? Purnamevavashishyate. 100% is left behind. That's the nature of Krishna. This is true not just in acts of creation in the world, but also in relationships. Most importantly, in relationships. Krishna is there. So any kind of relationship you're looking for in this world, we can find it in Krishna. Any kind of person we are, even when we can have relationships with different types of people, right? We can't have relationships with every kind of person. It's difficult. There's some people you just can't get along with. Their nature just doesn't, you know, gel with you very well. And we all know people like that. The minute we see them, it's just, you know, they irritate us to the depths. Because natures often clash, right? But Krishna can have a relationship with every living entity. Why? Because every kind of personality type is found within Krishna. Right? So if you're the comedian type, right? This is your nature, you're the comic type, always joking and extrovert and laughing and this and that, then who can be a better companion than Krishna? Like when he and Madhumangal get together, it's just a big hilarious party. Right? But maybe you're the more tragic type. Huh? Always, you know, life is low and always a little sad. And how are things going? Well, they could be better. And who's the better tragic hero than Krishna is? He left Vrindavan at the age of 12 and said, I'm coming right back a few days later, right, after I kill Kansa. And the residents of Vrindavan waited and waited and waited. 125 years they were waiting and waiting. Right? Krishna is the ultimate tragic hero. He knows what that side of life is like also. If you're the extrovert type, Krishna's that type too. If you're the introvert type, Krishna's that type too. Contemplative, Krishna's that type. Whatever our nature is, you can find it in Krishna. And therefore, he has all these different natures or personalities within him. Can you imagine someone like that? Someone who has every personality type within them? It's completely contradictory. This is why Jiva Goswami, he loves describing Krishna as Sarva Viruddha Dharma Ashraya. This is one of his favorite descriptions of God. He who is the abode, the resting place of all contradictory qualities. Sarva Viruddha Dharma, contradictory qualities, Ashraya, the resting place. Because all these different contradictory natures and personalities, they're all there in Krishna. And so we can find whatever kind of relationship we're in the mood of, whatever we want in him. He can be our master. He can be our father. He can be our son. He can be our friend. He can be our lover. He can be anything for us if we choose to accept him, if we approach him in that way. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tang tathaiva bhajamyaham, he says. And not only that, when he does come to you in that way, he will be there for you 100%. Right? You're the most important person in his life. You know, every cowherd boy in Vrindavan, he thinks, I don't know what makes me so special. I don't know what I've done to deserve this. But Krishna thinks of me as his best friend. Of all of these friends, I'm his best friend. Every cowherd boy is thinking like that. Is Krishna cheating them? Is he being deceptive? Is he going to one and saying, you're my best friend, then going to the other saying, you're actually my best friend? You know, like they do in these love triangles. Oh, actually, you're the only one for me. I don't know anyone else. Then they go to the next girlfriend and say, you're actually everything for me. And then one day they accidentally meet. And then, uh-oh, big problem, right? No, Krishna's not like that. He's actually his best friend and his best friend. In the material world, how many best friends can you have? One. That's the definition of best, right? Number two, we're going to be your second best friend. But Krishna can have 100 best friends. That's the logic, that's the mathematics of the spiritual world. There's no one best position. There's an unlimited number of best positions. When Krishna dances in the Rasa Leela, every gopi, between every gopi is Krishna. Between every, like, he's always there. So that's the wonderful thing about relationships with Krishna. That if we make Krishna the center of our relationships in this world, no matter what our material relationships may be like, perhaps they're wonderful, perhaps they're not so good. Perhaps there's some relationship that we lost, that we hanker for. Perhaps we're in the middle of a wonderful relationship, or a difficult, whatever it might be. But life can be meaningful, it can be happy. We can find what we're searching for. Now, the question is time for this, but how do we find that relationship with Krishna? Where do we find it? Krishna makes himself accessible in so many different ways. He's directly accessible to us. It's not difficult to contact Krishna, to have a relationship with him. What are some ways in which we can have a relationship with Krishna? The holy name, right? Nam. The name of Krishna is Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. It says, Nam Nama Kari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shakti Tatrarpita. Right? Krishna is directly present within his holy name. Abhinnatvat nama naminaha. There's no difference between Krishna and his holy name. We want to have a relationship with Krishna? Try chanting his holy name sincerely. You'll find that relationship guaranteed. What else? What else? Yes? His devotees. Right? Krishna is directly accessible in the form of his devotees. And? Scriptures, Shastra. Krishna descends in the forms of Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. Bhagavad Gita is directly sound vibration. from his mouth. He's present in those works. It's Krishna's form in Kali Yuga. Another form is the Srimad Bhagavatam. What else? The deities, right? Krishna's right here, right here. And if we have devotion, we approach him with faith, he will reciprocate with us. You can come in front of Krishna and look at him and you'll see he's in a different mood on different days. You can ask him something and he'll respond. I'm sure many of us have had this experience, right? The deity is there. He'll talk to us. He'll be expressive. You know the old dresses in our temple in Boise? They don't fit anymore. It's not like we wash them in hot water or something. They don't shrink. They don't fit. Krishna grows fatter over time. If you feed him well. Right? It's true. This you can ask any temple, any pujari who's been serving the same deities for years. You look at old pictures, they look different. Depending on the mood of the devotee, the service of the devotee, Krishna reciprocates directly in the form of the deity. Deity, devotee, Naam, Dham, and Bhagavatam. These five ways are direct ways in which we can have a relationship with Krishna. It's just up to us in terms of building that relationship. So I encourage all of you to take advantage of this. Google is a wonderful tool. There's nothing wrong with it. But it has to be kept in its place, right? It's just a tool. That's all it is. And as a tool, you pull it out when you need it and you put it away when you don't. Right? Somehow it's become something that's always there. We always have to be connected. But no. It's like a hammer, you know? You pull out a hammer when you need it and then you put it away. If someone carried a hammer around with them all the time, you'd think they're a little weird. Stay away from this person, right? No, unless they were a carpenter or something. So there's nothing wrong with Sri Sri Google, right? He's just perfectly fine. As long as he's used as a tool and just that, nothing more. For a relationship, we cannot substitute anything. Right? The only place for meaningful relationships is Sri Krishna. Okay. Thank you all very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.